Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, everybody. This is very exciting. I'm here with Lily Singh. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's exciting for me.
This is going to be, we are talking at 2:30 in the afternoon. Your show is airing tonight for the first time at 1:37 a.m., I think.
Yeah, 1:37, something along those lines.
Something along those lines.
But we're also, you know, special, so we're going to premiere it on YouTube as well in advance.
Oh, that's exciting.
At 10 p.m., yep.
10 p.m. it'll
EST.
Be available on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are you feeling? You have the first episode is in the can. You've already shot it.
It is.
How does it feel?
I just watched it 2 days ago, and I was excited. I was nervous, obviously super critical of myself, but I feel really good about the first episode. I think I come up with a strong point of view. I think it's funny. We got some sketch in there. I love the cold open. I'm just gonna have to tease and say I love the cold open of my first episode. A little bit of rap, no big deal. And my outfit is fire.
That's
so you
great.
Know what? I feel good all around.
It's interesting, the idea that you are super critical. As always, I'm always fascinated to hear that. But I guess you've always had to come from the position of having an eye on your work because you started pretty much being a jack of all trades with all your production when you were uploading videos on YouTube. When you first started doing that, what made you even think this is a good idea to start doing YouTube videos?
Well, I was a sad person.
Okay.
And YouTube made me happy. It's as simple as that. When I started making videos in 2010, I was pretty confused about what I wanted to do in life. You know, I was doing what my parents wanted me to do, which was I got a degree in psychology and then they wanted me to go to grad school. And so I just felt so not creative and not inspired by what I was doing. And it's at that time I discovered YouTube, and I was the first to think it was weird. I was like, these people are just making videos in their bedrooms, weird, until the next week where I made a video in my bedroom. And I just fell in love with the creative process and building a community and being able to share a perspective. And so I made a second and third video, and it snowballed into this.
Because I guess 2010 is when, is that right?
Yep.
And so you have 15 million subscribers
on my main channel, yeah.
And so those first few videos, like, talk us through the first year. When did you realize you had a community that was invested in you and what you were uploading?
Yes, yeah, so I'm not the product of a viral video. Every video I've made has counted and chipped away at that subscriber number. My first video got 70 views, a whopping 70 views. And then the next one got 95, and the next one got 200. So it was a slow climb for me. I was probably the last person to believe that this was going somewhere. You know, I had had some videos hit a million views. I even hit a million subscribers, I remember, because I had a party called A Millie for Lily, adult. And I still was like, oh no, this is a fluke. Like, I don't think this can be my career. It wasn't until I started to really, I think, travel that I really understood I had a community. It's hard, you know, you're seeing things on a screen.
Sure.
You're seeing numbers and comments on a screen. When you travel to different places in the world and people come up to you and express how much they relate to your content in person, that's really powerful. So when that started to happen, I thought, oh, the internet in fact works.
And also you talk about people expressing the way they feel about your videos. Your videos always were pretty honest in expressing how you felt. I'm assuming your fan base feels a connection to you that you might not feel with someone who you know, as an actor saying someone else's words. They obviously feel as though they know you.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that's really special about creators on YouTube is they are very candid, and you get a glimpse into their real life and their real thoughts and feelings, because there's less gatekeepers and there's less people informing them and telling them what to do and say. But also, I think just accessibility-wise, you know, I've been way more accessible than, let's say, like, a Taylor Swift probably wouldn't do as many live streams as me, or you probably wouldn't see her walking through the mall like you would see me. So I think people just feel that sense of like, oh, she's like my older sister because she's just like me in her bedroom, and I see her at these events and she responds on Twitter and all that type of stuff, you know?
You mentioned that you couldn't quite believe it, and you also mentioned you had a psychology degree.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that you're
putting
parents...
that to great use yes. today?
Well, you do have a writing staff now, and I would imagine that a psychology degree would come in very
You know, everyone
handy.
Says that, and yeah. I'm just going to say, sure.
Okay, so not accurate. But how did your parents feel when you first... Because this was right after you got your degree is when mm-hmm. this happened, right? So did you go to them and sort of explain, hey, this is... I've sort of recalibrated what I want to do, and it sort of involves internet videos.
Yes, I said I recalibrated what I'd like to do, Mom and Dad, and I would like to know. Well, I was in the process of applying for grad school, and uh-huh. I was writing all these essays, and I had a moment where I just stopped and had to make a decision to be like, I want to be happy, and I want to prioritize my happiness. So I walked into my parents' bedroom, and I said, I don't want to go to grad school. I'd like to make videos on the internet, please, and thank you. And, you know, for them, I think assumed it was a phase. They were like, Lily's going through a weird phase. Let's help her get it out of her system. They gave me a year.
Uh-huh.
They said, you have a year to experiment whatever you're doing on the internet. And if it goes somewhere, great. And if it doesn't, then we would want you to go to grad school. So they kind of put a ticking clock over my head that was very helpful because it made me
sure.
hustle. And in that year, I learned to edit and I learned how to use a camera. I remember I saved up for my first camera. It was $6.99 and I almost had a heart attack when I bought it. And I just taught myself how to market and how to play the YouTube game. And it went somewhere, thankfully.
And at the end of that first year, was it obvious not just to yourself but to everybody else that this had been successful and this was the path forward?
I think it was obvious to everybody else that it could be a career. Not to me.
Sure.
To me, what was obvious was that I was super committed to it and it was going somewhere. I think I still had doubts on whether it could be long-term or not. I think it's the immigrant mentality in me that my parents have instilled. I still have that till this day where I'm like, this could all go away.
Sure. They must be incredibly proud now.
I mean, yeah, they have their moments.
All right. Like all parents?
Yeah, I'm not married and I don't have kids, so they have their moments.
Right,
you know?
Right. You got those issues going
yeah,
for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this first year is all took place in Canada, right? As the first year of...
Yeah, so I moved to LA in 2015.
Okay, so the first whole 5 years of this yep. phenomenon is taking place in Canada.
In my parents' house.
Wow, and so then what is the decision? Like, what do you think that makes you decide to pack up and move to LA?
I was going back and forth almost once or twice a month just to have meetings with agents or to do shoots. So I was going back and forth a lot. And when I started to miss opportunities, that was a big red flag for me. I remember there was a shoot I really wanted to do, and very last minute they said to me, oh, wait, you don't live in LA? Never mind. And they just totally ghosted me. And so I just knew that to take the next step and step out of my comfort zone, I had to move to LA, which, if I'm really candid, is super unique for someone like me, because in Indian culture, you do not get to move out of your parents' house as a woman unless you get married.
Uh-huh.
So for me to move to a different country because of my career is kind of unheard of
yeah,
in my family. You
that's
know?
Cool. And yeah. did they understand when you went to your parents and said, hey, this requires me to be somewhere else? How was that?
Yes. So I kept telling my mom for a whole year, Mom, I just want to let you know I'm probably going to move to LA. And she was like, yeah, sure, cool. And I was like, great. 8 months ago, Mom, I'm just reminding you, in 8 months, I'm probably going to move to LA. This happened for a full year. She was unfazed, completely supportive. And then the night of me packing all my stuff, about to head to the airport, she comes up to me, crying, sobbing, why do you have to move to LA? You never even told me you were going. This is truly what happened. So I think she had a very late breakthrough of believing me. You know,
you obviously, and I think this is true of a lot of people, you come to the decision first, then you have to tell other
mm-hmm.
people
yep.
and explain it to them. Was it hard to come to the decision to host this talk show? I assume they come to you. It took me a couple weeks when I got offered this show. What yep. was your thought process and how long did it take you to say yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was presented with this opportunity, first even receiving the phone call was so confusing for me because it was so outside the realm.
So there was no whispers that this was coming?
No, okay. I don't recall.
Yeah.
I just know that it was not there, and then suddenly it was very there.
Sure.
And I remember getting the phone call from my manager and my agents and just being so confused because young Lily would have never thought this was in the realm of possibility. You know, so I'm like, wait, they want me to be on the show or, like, no, host the show? What do you mean, like, host the whole show? And so for me to actually comprehend the opportunity, it took, like, 30 whole minutes. And then I took a month, about a month. You said a couple weeks. Yeah. I took a month to really think about it because it's a big commitment,
yeah,
professionally, personally. And so I sought out some advice from some of my peers and ultimately decided, fine, I'll name drop. Fine, Seth, you got it out of me.
Okay.
Hasan Minhaj and Dwayne Johnson were the
good
two
ones.
People I asked.
Good, good, good.
And
I assume they were both enthusiastic about the idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think my main concern was I didn't want to be pigeonholed as a host. I have so many other aspirations. I want to direct. I want to act. I want to storytell in so many different ways. And Dwayne said something that was so smart, which was, you never let yourself be pigeonholed as the YouTube girl. So it's ultimately up to you and the path you create. And that's what I needed to hear. And so,
that's great.
Yeah.
Being someone who came from YouTube, even though you weren't pigeonholed in it, there is that real DIY quality to it.
Yep.
Is it hard or has it been hard for you? Obviously, with a show at the scale you're doing now, you have to outsource a lot of stuff, mm-hmm, and turn it over to other people. Has that, mm-hmm, part been hard, or is it just so refreshing after all these years of having to do everything that people can step in and help?
It's a little bit of both, admittedly. The other day, someone came up to me and said, hi, I am the person that does your script advising, and I'm like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So there's definitely a learning curve involved in what everyone does, what those jobs mean. Because, yeah, in my world, I have 5 people that shoot my videos, and my assistant also does my set design, also does my props and costume, and, like, does everything else. And so now everything is so delegated where it's nice, but it also, like, I almost don't believe it's going to happen. So for the first week, you know, my props department, I'd be like, so wait, you're going to make this prop for sure, right? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, for sure you're going to do, like, this is your job. So there's a learning curve there. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is nice. It's nice to focus on creative and have so many people that are so invested.
Yeah. It's amazing to be surrounded by experts. Like, that's what I always tell people is so great,
exactly,
about having shows like this, is anybody who gets a job in charge of things like props at, mm-hmm, this level, you can't believe how good they are.
Right,
at things,
exactly,
like props.
And I think also the thing that I was kind of shocked was energy consumption is a little different. Walking into a room with 5 people shooting a video and my small team is very different than walking into a studio with 100 people.
Yeah.
It kind of demands a different level of energy.
Yes.
So I found that even though I feel like the hours aren't as bad as my previous life, the energy still drains at such a rate where it's pretty tiring.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, yeah, it's fascinating to hear someone come into a late night show who had worse hours before.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had some days that are pretty brutal, but I'm going to be honest with you. When I saw the schedule for this late night show, I was like, please, you're telling me I have to go to the same spot every day with craft services? Yeah, okay, this is a walk in the park.
Because you pretty much were posting, is it safe to say, like 2 pieces of sketch comedy a week on your YouTube,
yeah,
channel?
Yeah, for 8 years I did 2 pieces of sketch comedy a week plus daily vlogs. So it was a total of 9 videos a week.
9 videos a week. And how time intensive, you know, daily vlogs maybe, mm-hmm, seem a little easier, but to go out and shoot a sketch with not, you know, with, mm-hmm, a skeleton crew,
right,
if that. How much of your week was taken up doing those?
A lot, because I wrote everything myself as,
right,
well. I wrote everything myself, and I have over like 2,000 videos. So there comes a point where I'm like, what else am I going to write,
right,
about being in the videos, being part of the editing process? And then with that is a whole nother life of, like, you know, I wrote a book, and I go on tour, and I have events, and I have these brand endorsements. So it felt like 3 jobs,
yeah,
every single day that I did.
And what happens to the YouTube channel now? I think that's probably something your fans are concerned about or curious about,
you know,
I should say.
You'd think that, but my fans are so supportive. They're just like, we want you to sleep. Whatever gets,
oh, that's,
you to,
nice,
sleep. Yeah, they're very, very sweet. But the YouTube channel, so I ended my regimented upload schedule at the top of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I still love YouTube. I still want to post videos. Admittedly, it's been a little hard in the past month or two because I've been working on the show. But I have every intention to continue uploading, just not on a regimented schedule.
And I assume that those who are, you know, subscribers and, mm-hmm, and people engage with you on YouTube are aware
of this. I love that you
know
all the lingo.
I feel like
I really appreciate it.
I'm literally reaching into the ether for each one of these, so I'm
really
so happy,
like,
that
my
I'm getting
soul
here.
Is so happy.
And what, tell me, you know, again, because as we talked earlier, I feel like people feel like they know you, and that makes, mm-hmm, sense. Again, the amount of engagement you've had with them for the last, mm-hmm, decade is incredible. So when did people first start coming up to you? Like, what was that like for you, and what was it like for them to see somebody that they knew in person?
Yeah, I mean, the first couple times it happened, I think I was just really overwhelmed, and I was probably nerdier than the person approaching me. I was like, oh my God, can I have a picture with you? Like, sure. Can you sign my arm? So it was really a sweet experience. I mean, now when people come up to me, I think what excites me the most is, you know, of course I love taking pictures with people. I love to hear that I've made them laugh. But the thing I really love and the legacy I really would like to leave behind is that I've inspired them to change some part of their mentality or their moral compass or their work ethic. Very often I get, you know, because of you, you've inspired me to work really hard to achieve X, Y, and Z. And I think that's such an important legacy to leave behind. It's such a specific type of inspiration where someone can say, you've improved my work ethic, you know?
Well, it's so fascinating, too, because when you say that, it makes me realize, like, your career, every step of it has been out there for public consumption, mm-hmm. which is fascinating because ultimately, you know, people, you know, I was doing a lot of stuff before I was on TV, but it's not stuff that you can go back and look at now. Mm-hmm. It was on little stages, and people were either there or they weren't.
Right.
But for those people that were there from the beginning, they've really been able to watch exactly what happens when somebody starts with a seed of an idea and a work ethic mm-hmm. and to where you are now. So it's really cool.
For sure. I mean, right now, currently in this moment, because my show is premiering tonight, my fans are going through this moment of like, this is where she started. This is, so there's like collages of like, every appearance I've done on Late Night leading up to today that they've made. There's moments of like my tour. So they've made just collages and videos and compilations of just all these moments leading up to today.
Are they happy to share you with everyone, or is there a sense in your fan base of like, we were here this whole time?
Wow, you're so tuned in. There's a little bit of both. I think they're very, very happy, but every once in a while I'll see a tweet that's like, I'm not ready for the world to take her away from me.
Sure, sure. I think for those people, it strikes me that it'd be very hard to take you away from your core beliefs. Yeah, so yeah. I think they don't have much to worry
about. Always going to remember the community that gave me all this stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I think that it must be very exciting for them to, the fact that you are certainly, I don't want to say mainstream because YouTube is as mainstream as anything else these days, but to be on a platform like network television must be exciting for them to say to maybe a generation older than them, hey, look, this person I've been talking about for 10 years, look where they are now.
And even for me, I mean, a lot of people keep asking, what does it feel like to go to TV being on YouTube? Because like, the worlds are kind of merging together. See, for me, I still grew up in the age of television. You know,
right.
I grew up being super excited to watch my favorite TV shows. And so for me, it's just super special to also say to the old generation, like, I got a TV show.
Yeah. And, you know, my entire career has been television. It's amazing how many people watch my show on YouTube versus.
Of course, yeah.
So the two are sort of interchangeable.
Yeah, I mean, the way I view it is we're all storytellers. I'm not so pressed as to, and which is why 1:30 is a perfect time. So I'm not so pressed as to how people consume. I just want them to consume.
Yeah.
So I'm well aware that 1:35, that's the launch of my show, and it will live a life beyond that for the next 24 hours. And if people watch it on YouTube, great.
Yes. It is true, as long as people hear what you're saying.
Exactly.
And it's really exciting to be on the same network as you. You have so much to say, and
I'm so
glad.
And thank you for everyone listening. I just need to interrupt this whole podcast to let you know Seth has been extremely supportive, and he is wonderful, and he's a lovely human being. So if you're listening to him and you're a fan, you chose wisely.
And I'm very excited about saying stay tuned for Lily Singh, because the entire time I've done this show, I've said stay tuned for Carson Daly. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking really forward to being able to do that every night. And I'm going to talk to you tonight on the show as well. Thanks so much for being
here. Thank you so much, Seth.
Bye.
Appreciate it. Bye. You're so good at this.
Oh,
look at you.
I've done a few podcasts.
You're so good.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new kids and family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.